Welcome back to this week's installment of Expand Your Mind and Be Kind. Thanks for joining Ryan and I on our adventure, and I hope everyone enjoys our episode. Thank you.
So today's quote is from Senator Joseph McCarthy. Was a senator back in the 1950s when the Cold War was really heating up and communism versus capitalism was all the rage. So he said, quote, "Today we are engaged in a final all-out battle between communistic atheism and Christianity. The modern champions of communism have selected this as the time, and ladies and gentlemen, the chips are down. They are truly down." It's been a long, long time getting from there to here.
It's been a long, long time. My name is John Bon Jovi.
Couldn't tell them apart.
Not even close.
What's up, Ryan?
What's up, Jim? You know, I have been saying for the longest time, what's up with this instant Jell-O business? Why do people want to use instant Jell-O when they could use regular Jell-O for Thanksgiving?
Right. Everyone knows that time is, the more time you take on something, it the more love that goes into it.
Yeah, like the difference between pre-made, like store-bought cookies that you just put in the oven versus ones that you make yourself. I mean, there's virtually, like, no difference.
Homemade bread instead of buying the little, like, pre-slightly baked bread that you get and toss in the oven for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But then call it your own.
Yeah. Like, I made this.
I made this. I put it in the oven.
Very carefully. Yeah. The oven just did some things, and now you can enjoy this bread that was really already cooked, but slightly crisped. Anyway, I digress.
So today's... Yes.
What is today?
I was going to say, today's quote was... kind of, it was Joseph McCarthy's, known for, if anyone is unaware, McCarthy is attributed as kind of being the father of the anti-communism movement in this country, started back in the 1940s and 50s. And it is kind of permeated into modern times, into today's political landscape and atmosphere. And Ryan and I thought it would be a good topic to kind of hit on because it is kind of in light of all the, you know, the recent political craziness and maybe kind of lack of understanding between a lot of our fellow Americans, we would hit on this topic because it is really applicable and it is kind of the root of why we can't get a lot of things done as Americans.
And you mean get a lot of things done like from a policy perspective?
Yeah, like in legislature, like a Democrat versus Republican, like us versus them. There's no bridging the gap. There's no letting this slide or voting for this because it, you know. So, like a little bit of history here. McCarthy was known as a hardliner. He was kind of infamous for accusing other senators and politicians of being communists. And he actually, like, was instrumental in getting a lot of people arrested. And his kind of doctrine, as it were, has been continued into this day where a lot of people see the Democratic Party as being infiltrated by communists. And therefore, like, anything that they propose, anything that they are trying to do is essentially to just bring about a stepping stone that will eventually lead into full-blown communism and the death of our constitution and our country as we know it, which is ludicrous.
Largely inaccurate, yeah.
Right.
So I would like to hear your thoughts on words that are kind of like weaponized politically to like mean an overarching concept that don't legitimately mean what they really do. Like, I think of socialism as something that, or like socialist as a kind of a negative, like pejorative term,
right,
that's been used by the Republican Party to label Democratic policy as like communist, or like you're relinquishing all control of your life to the government, and that's not really what that word means.
Right. Well, let's just jump straight into our lovely Merriam-Webster dictionary. So the definition of socialism in Merriam-Webster is any of various economic and political theories advocating collectivity or government ownership and administration and the means of production and distribution of goods. Whereas the definition of communism is a totalitarian system of government in which a single authoritarian party controls state-owned means of production. It is the final stage of the Marxist theory, which the state has withered away and economic goods are distributed equally. It is complete collectivism. I mean, I feel like the socialism is it's the S word in our country. Like, every other democracy in the world is a socialistic democracy. It's like that. It's that well-tread middle line between the far red communists and the far far left communists and the far right unrestrained capitalism,
libertarianism or something.
Right, like where government has no control, everyone, it's laissez-faire, like it's up to the individual, it's make your own destiny kind of thing. What your choices are is what you make out of life. And I feel like, you know, our European brothers do it really well. It's worked for them very well for the past like 40, 50 years, basically since the end of World War II. But yet us Americans, we avoid that centrist line because of the S word, because of this fear that socialism is just a step to communism. And there's no middle ground. Like, it's like, well, if you're going to be socialist, you're a communist. I mean, there's just no middle ground. And it's going to go, our constitution's going to get ruined. It's going to be thrown out. We're going to be a totalitarian observation state, where you have no control over anything and you lose all your freedoms, you lose your right to practice religion. You know, like the worst case scenario. But
right,
the reality is socialism in moderation, or really just a treading in that middle area of the political spectrum is not communism. It's not bad. It doesn't throw out your rights. It doesn't limit your freedom. It seeks to provide the best. It seeks to provide the greatest good for the most people. It's the most. It's the balance between complete unrestrained capitalism and freedom, and collectivism, and putting our money into a common pot.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So, Why do you think, Ryan, we are so divided? Like, politically speaking, like, in the Senate, in the House, like, on our state levels. Like, why? Well, go ahead.
I think the big challenge, and these are kind of related, but I don't know if they're necessarily equivalent to, like, using words to, like, socialism or socialist or communist to, right, like, use that for the electorate to talk about things, and, like, the party membership to use those terms to kind of, like, demonize or make other the party that they disagree with. But as far as your question about the legislature or Congress having such a divide, a lot of it has to do with pleasing the electorate, like the people that have voted them into office. Mm-hmm. And so I think they are more hardlined or party loyalists to say, like, whatever the general populace thinks or says, I'm just going to go along with that and there'll be gridlock. So it's like, it's almost kind of like the idea of I have to be reelected into my position, so I have to say and do things from a policy perspective that reflect the wants and needs of the people who elected me, then it does prevent you from being able to make compromise or get things done, because both parties are trying to please the people who put them in office.
Right.
And I feel like it's because of how we label things too.
Right. Like, yeah. It's our general, like, definition of socialism. Like, I know, like, not everyone is a fan of Obama, but Obama actually put it very well. Cause he was a president who attempted to bridge the gap. He really did make an effort, even though he was definitely demonized for being too left. But he said that a lot of his peer, or a lot of his Senate Republican friends, or a lot of his right-wing political friends opposed him because they're like, look, I agree with you. Like, I feel like this should be done, but I'm not going to get reelected if I support you because you have a label on you, and my constituents will eat me alive if I don't vote for this or refuse to vote for this, whatever it may be.
You know, the crummy thing about this too is, I mean, I don't want to overgeneralize here, but from my basic understanding and my experience in life is most people in the general public are not informed about the details of most policy that's enacted. Like, if you went and asked several people on the street, what are some basic principles or basic components of the Affordable Care Act, they wouldn't be able to tell you. But they're right. So against it because it's labeled as, like, something associated with a party. And so it's like, if you are a party loyalist, or like you said, you have fear associated with, like, well, I don't want to inch toward a really extreme ideology or way of governing, then I'm just against it because the idea behind what it stands for is what I'm against, not anything other than this is a policy that gives people, you know, better access to healthcare.
Right.
it's agnosticized, you know, like it's labeled as to something.
Right. It's America's fear of the S word. Like, boiled down to it. It's seen as a shift to socialism, but until that language changes, until the understanding of those things change, like, people will just die hard oppose it because anything moving in that direction is seen as the slippery slope that's going to kill us. It's going to kill our government. It's going to kill our nation. But they couldn't be farther from the truth.
So from the perspective of, like, I need to please my constituents, like you just mentioned a little bit ago, if I'm not informed about what the policy is anyway, like, that excuse doesn't really pan out, right? They're, like, posturing is what it seems like to me on both sides. I mean, if a Democrat is against a Republican bill or something like that, they say, like, well, that's giving too much power to a certain group of people or too much money mm-hmm. to a certain group of people, like tax breaks and things like that. It's like, that's, that's part of the Republican agenda. I mean, I think both sides are guilty of it. I think the better right. thing to do is to come together. Yeah, like, come together as a group and say, like, what's going to be the biggest benefit for the most people? And it's not really seen as such. It's seen as, like, well, we want to preserve the power that we have. And by doing so, we're just going to naturally, by default, be against certain things. Like, take, for example, the coronavirus relief. Like, there's been gridlock in Congress from the Republican Party because the Democrats introduced a bill that is too hefty.
Right.
And it's like, rather than compromise and, like, come to some sort of terms, it was politicized. It was used as a, like, political tool by both parties to say, like, well, we're not going to concede. And the other party is like, well, we're not going to pass that because it's too insane. And so it's like there was gridlock when really they're looking out for their own self-interest. And I'm not saying this because I'm one of those people that's like, see, the system is broken and no one can agree on anything. I think people can. I think people can compromise, but I don't think they've been given the opportunity to, because there has been so much polarization in the past 4 years that right. it's like, I'm so afraid if I disenfranchise the voters by agreeing with a policy that the leader of our country right now would be against, that if I publicly denounce that or voted against it or for it, then I would lose votes and I would probably lose my seat in the House or the Senate.
Right. I mean, it's like, by voting for, or like even like not voting against something that has the S word attached to it, it's political suicide by a Republican, which is like, what? It's always kind of befuddled me, because socialistic policies have always kind of been a part of any democracy, really. Like, our police force, our firefighters, our programs to safety net the poor and the unfortunate. Like, all of those are a part of our society, and they form. The roads we drive on, Jesus, that's socialism. Yep. And it's just like, why can't we extend those things to certain other things that affect all of us almost equally, like healthcare and education? And because that, at the end of the day, is what most Democrats, yes, there's some fringe Democrats that are arguably communists, let's be honest here. But sure. Most Democrats, that's all they want. They want a society where we look after each other and protect each other from laissez-faire capitalism. But, you know, anything past those things, anything, because those things haven't been labeled socialist, let's be honest. Like, the police force is seen as a very conservative organization. It's socialism. It yep. is what it is.
Relies on public funding.
It is 100%. There is no private money besides tickets. But see, tickets are taken in the name
of the public.
Exactly. And so it's wild to me, especially somebody yeah. who works in healthcare and sees the daily frustrations of being restricted on what you do with someone, how you treat people based on their income, based on how much their insurance levels and stuff. It's like, it is wild. It is, and it can happen to anyone. Anyone can get in a car wreck, okay? Anyone can be unfortunate enough to not have a job that doesn't provide them with insurance, or at least, like, good insurance.
Totally.
So I don't know, man. Like
I've heard. I wanted to share this with you because I read it a few weeks ago, and it one of the ideas that's been brought about is like defectors of both parties forming a like moderate party, and it would only take a few. Like it wouldn't take too many. It would take like a handful from each party, and that would I feel like would be a much more accurate representation of the majority of the country. And like you and I talked about offline from the podcast is like that could be a, they would have to form like coalitions with different parties to get things done. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they would be forced to collaborate because there wouldn't be this gridlock of like, well, we've got the majority in the House or Senate. And so we're just going to like gridlock or.
Right. We're just going to cover our eyes and plug our ears. Right. Yeah. No, and there's a lot of I think the moderate centrist party really only has a chance with the younger people because the older generations are so set in their ways. And the idea of a third party has been shot down so many times. Like, it'll never work. It'll never work. You can't have a third party. Nothing will ever get done. But I feel like most millennials, like a good portion of millennials and younger people, even like the generation what is it, Z, that we're on now, that are like, look, we don't give a, pardon my French, a shit about being Democrat or Republican. We just want a society where we can live and grow and support families in and look out for one another. And all of this yelling back and forth and all of this petty not listening to each other, blocking each other, you know, fighting each other is so stupid and so
it's really counterproductive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That, you know, it might have a chance. Give it a couple of years. Maybe a third party, a centrist party will arise. I mean, most European nations are controlled by roughly five parties. There's always a back and forth between five parties. There's usually two or three big parties that kind of like majority, run the show.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But they have minor parties that form coalitions, and none of it is this 50% blue, 50% red, and a constant gridlock against each other. It's a lot of working together to get things done.
I think what we also have to kind of move past is this a Republican or a Democrat idea? And we have to think of it as, is this a good idea? Is it going to benefit? Is it going to benefit most people? And if that's the case, like, I feel like there should be some meritocracy to putting something like that through. It shouldn't be bureaucracy. It should be, hey, can we all agree? Yeah, we're not going to agree on every piece of it because there's just, and I think there's benefit to a balance of conservatism and liberalism. I think there's a huge balance that needs to be struck because unchecked one way or the other, it's like maintain the status quo and not change anything that really does need to be changed. Or there's so much change that there's whiplash in a whole bunch of different sectors of our society that kind of leave people confused and their head spinning. But that shouldn't be an excuse to not do anything as well.
Right. I would say a large portion of the like hardliner Republicans and the hardliner Democrats are people from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, kind of like that huge cultural revolution we were going through, where there was just a lot of big divides in our nation. And they have this mentality that it's us versus them. It's red versus blue. But a lot of the younger people in this country are so fed up with that. I know me and you, just using us as an example, we grew up Republican. You know, we have very Republican parents. But, you know, we learned for ourselves, you know, we kind of saw the world from a different point of view. We didn't have that dividing time to grow up in. And we are just befuddled. Like, why are so many people refusing to work together. Like, we are legitimately confused. We do not know why.
Yeah, and it's exposure. I'm a firm believer of that.
Yeah.
I think people are just not exposing themselves to new ideas, or not exposing mm-hmm. themselves to places that are different from where they live, even. And people mm-hmm. are not talking in person. They're talking online, and, you know, anybody, and you and I have talked about this tons of times, but like, it, anybody can be a keyboard warrior and say a whole bunch of rude, mean, evil, nasty stuff and slink away from their keyboard and go do whatever they're going to do and feel some brief sense of entitlement and power, or like mm-hmm. victory or confirmation that, like, oh yeah, self-righteous, I showed that person they're an idiot, you know, like I showed them what was what. And maybe like the goal of those conversations are so muddled because there are trolls and there are people that are unmovable and unshakable. And like you said, some people are just so set in their ways, they're unwilling to listen to anything else. And right. I don't believe anyone is a lost cause, but I think there are some people that it's so difficult to even get them to listen to a different way of thinking that your effort is better spent on someone who is willing to have a conversation with you, is willing to be respectful of your view and your opinion. Mm-hmm. And I will be the first person to admit I am very guilty of, like, especially early on in my early adult years, of like stigmatizing groups of people that I thought were ignorant or like party affiliation and things like that. And I was really bad about, yeah, making pretty harsh and often very incorrect assumptions about people in wide swaths, because it's easier to do that. It's
right.
easier to say like all Republicans are this or all Democrats are this, but mm-hmm. the real work to humanizing people and seeing them as an individual is harder work, but it's worth doing, because then you start to realize they're not some weird creature with horns and trying to eat babies or whatever. They're like another human being who lives and breathes and probably has different views and beliefs about certain things than you do, but for the most part want what's best for them and for you.
Right. I feel like that is the story of our generation. I know there is conservatives that look at universities, they point at universities and they say these organizations have warped the minds of our children and have taken them away from our faith and our way of thinking, you know, because of their socialistic professors and their culture and such. Like I've had my own parents accuse me of this. That is actually a fairly core belief of a lot of conservatives in this country, who their children, who are now moderates or Democrats. That's just their way of looking at it. But I personally never had a liberal professor. The only thing that happened to me in college is I got to be my own person. I got to meet people from all over the world. I got to meet people from so many different backgrounds. I got to meet people of different races, people of different sexual orientations, people of different childhoods, different socioeconomic statuses. And what it showed me was that I had a lot to learn. And I needed to change my outlook on the world because I was so very wrong. All the things I had been told growing up, all the things that I had been, you know, basically had been shoved down my throat since I was a little kid. I was like, this stuff is bound in ignorance. It's bound in fear. Like, there is so much more out there than I knew about. And I had to do reevaluating. That's why I changed my political affiliation. I was a registered Republican up until like the age of like 23, because that's what I knew. That's what I had been told is the good, just way to go. Yeah. And I registered Democrat because it was the party that closer aligned to the things that I believed in. Do I call myself a diehard Democrat? No. I call myself a moderate who is also an American and wants what's best for our nation and best for our future generations.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of people, if they would give themselves a chance to look at the world that way and see things, I think a lot of the people that I know personally that I either went to high school with, I don't know too many people that I went to college with that would maybe feel this way, but that's not to say there aren't any. Right. A lot of pretty open-minded people because, and that's not to say that's a political leaning, that's just a nature of like their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The more ideas and the more things you're exposed to, the more possibility you see. And right. I love the quote by Mark Twain that says, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things that cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all one's lifetime. I mean, even travel regionally to a different state, to a different city, to like, even if you're not willing to venture to a different country, like just traveling in the country that you live in is so important to be able to see different races, ethnicities, backgrounds, sexual orientations, genders. Like there are so many factors and variables that make people who they are. But what you'll realize is people are not that different from the things that they want and versus the things that you want. And I think one of the ways that we can kind of heal as a country is by humanizing each other again. Like there's not any value in continuing this war between two sides. Like just, it doesn't, no one wins. You know, you right. might get some weird sense of gratification because the person that you voted for is in office now, but what happens in 4 years? Right? Like there,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to put yourself in an emotional endless loop where it's like when the person or the people that you feel in office are acting in your best interest, it should be we all are putting people in office that are acting in all of our best interests, regardless of what their political affiliation is. And we should encourage the people that we vote for Congress to do the same. Like town halls, we should be saying, who gives a shit about our party? Like make something happen, like do something, enact some sort of policy that's going to make our lives better. And it, as long as there's the rhetoric of us versus them and that'll never work, that's just going to be counterproductive. And it's going to put, if anything, it's going to prevent us from making really needed and necessary progress. Most people agree climate change is real. Can we like work together to make something happen there? Most people agree that healthcare is a very important aspect of being a human being. Can we not agree that we at least provide some sort of option for people that's publicly funded, that everybody has access regardless of whether they're employed? Like there are people that won't quit their jobs because they're afraid of losing their health insurance. And that's the only reason they stay employed, which is ridiculous because it just people are unhappy in certain jobs. So anyway, I'm pontificating about this a little bit, but I feel very strongly about it.
Ryan, that was perfectly said.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I feel like a deflated whoopee cushion right now.
I think we all do.
Yeah. I feel like that's what 2020 is a deflated whoopee cushion.
Yep. There's just been fart sounds the entire time. It's been a year for the history books.
It's been a decade for the history books. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, do you have any final thoughts before we move on to the Be Kind and take a little break?
No. I think we're good to take a break.
All right, sounds good. We'll be right back, everybody. Jimbo Slice.
Welcome back to the podcast where we talk about conquering the world. And one socialistic idea at a time.
And also tacos. Because who doesn't like tacos?
God, tacos.
Tacos are good. Man, that makes me want tacos for dinner.
isn't it weird? No, it's not weird. Isn't it funny that some of the best tacos you can get are not the most expensive, and they're not the most, like, accessible? Like, okay, have you ever had tacos, like street tacos, at a Mexican grocery store?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's basically just meat and onion and cilantro.
Oh, my gosh.
And maybe, like, some sort of, like, aioli or something, yeah.
Right. It's the best. It literally is the best. And they're dirt cheap. Ugh. If you've never been to a Mexican grocery store that, like, also has a restaurant, most of them have, you should go.
It's very good. Yeah.
It is. You will not regret it.
Yeah.
And they have really good deals at those grocery stores. You can get avocados, like produce, meat, anything for like a fairly cheap price for a good quality too. You'll never find bigger avocados, by the way. Unless you go to Mexico.
Avocados are the best. They go great with literally anything. You can put it on your toast. You can put it on your...
You can eat it whole.
Sourdough toast. Oh, just toast. You can put it on your chocolate chip cookies. I'm just kidding. Yes. I don't know.
You can make guac cookies. That's really good. Oh, my God. I've never tried that, but it actually sounds kind of okay.
Yeah, I think if you maybe like put the right stuff in it, made it a good balance of sweet and savory, it would be pretty tasty.
Right, you really can. Once you balance those flavors, you can really do anything with anything. Right,
pretty much whatever you want. So wait, we're doing the Be Kind. I think for this week, what I would encourage everybody is to try and do this exercise if you can. If not, that's fine, but I would encourage you to at least try if you can figure out somebody that would participate. Try to find somebody who disagrees with you on something. This can be politics, it could be religion, it could be literally anything that you have some issues agreeing with someone on. So it could be somebody that you know. It'd be probably difficult right now, given all the restrictions going on, to go out in public and find a stranger to do this with. But what the exercise is you help them, like you work with them to have them try to argue for or convince you that the way that they disagree with is the right way. So for example, like if I am all for gun control and they are all for like removing any restrictions on gun ownership at all, then I could say, how would you make the argument for gun control if you were for it? This is all like a hypothetical thing. And so what this does is this helps, it's like an exercise in empathy to get people to think about potentially someone else's view that's different than their own. It may not convince them and may not move them very much, but what it could do and what it's possible or capable of doing is getting them to at least entertain ideas about different ways of thinking. And you can do it with yourself too. So if you're just absolutely stumped about like, gosh, I don't know how anybody could support this idea, critically think about it. And you could even write it down on paper and you could come up with a thesis or hypothesis or argument against or for whatever you are having a hard time understanding or grasping. So, And if you can't do that or don't want to do that, I would just encourage you to have a conversation that's not through text. It's very easy and convenient if you work from home or otherwise to just, you know, text people back and forth or message people on social media. Even if it's a like Skype call or something where you could see the person's face, it's much more difficult to like be hateful towards someone in person or to their face. So I would just encourage people to start talking with each other again instead of relying on this, which is still relevant and convenient and a great way to stay connected with people, but it shouldn't be a substitute for the other. So anyway, right. That's all I have. Do you have anything you want to add, Jim?
I mean, I would just add, nothing frustrates me more than the statement, agree to disagree. That statement is essentially like, look, we're not going to talk about this, okay?
Yep.
But I think that's the movement, that's the turn in the wrong direction. If you're not willing to talk something out with someone, you are never going to find common ground with them. Once you learn why someone holds something so like dear to their heart or so closely to their being, it may change your outlook on the whole shebang. Even if it doesn't, at least you understand where the person is coming from, and it is less likely to demonize them and think of them as like, oh, well, they're just a libtard, like they don't know what they're talking about, kind of thing. Which that's a bit much, but but yeah, no, you should disagree, and you should be able to talk about it.
Yeah, and no, I appreciate the excitement around
this topic. Yeah, I got some gusto around that one.
And we've talked about this on the podcast before, but you know, let people speak for themselves as well. Don't speak for them. So if you feel that someone is a certain way, actually ask them, and don't ask them a confirming question, which is like, I think you think this, don't you? You just say like, well, what do you feel, or how do you feel about this topic? Or what do you think would be helpful for us moving forward about this particular thing? So anyway, that's what we have for Be Kind. We hope that you will pick up the phone when vaccine is readily available, maybe get out and socialize with some people that you don't know and get to know some differing opinions, but seek out some people that you disagree with, because that's extremely important to understanding and having more empathy in the world. So we'll take a little break, and then we'll be right back with the recommendation, which I'm very excited for because it's from Jim this week.
I know. So I want to...
Yeah. Jimbo Slice up in his house.
Rick-a-dick-a-doo.
Give me the beep.
Well, everyone knows that Ryan has the best recommendations, but I'm going to try to be the close runner-up here. And you know what? Politics is dense. Our core beliefs are dense. And so I'm thinking something that's dense for dinner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Some Reese's peanut butter, double fudge, chocolate chip, avocado cake.
Pasta!
Pasta. Yeah. It's next
deep best fried mofo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, well, out with the cringe and in with the delicious.
Yeah,
it's my boy, Jim. It's my boy!
I'll stop being the hype man. Go ahead.
So, the dish I recommend tonight is something that will make everyone feel warm and fuzzy inside. Ooh. It is called... Not... just chicken marsala. It is stuffed chicken marsala.
What? My mind is blown. So, fun fact, Jim and I used to work at Olive Garden together. Mm-hmm. And there were two distinct dishes at that time. One was called chicken marsala. One was called stuffed chicken marsala. And if you messed up the difference, people became very angry. And most people... preferred stuffed chicken marsala.
And there's a reason for this. Anyway, basically what happens is you take some lovely, organic, sustainably sourced, grown in the backyard chicken breast. Just kidding. Any chicken breast. You slice it like lengthwise down the middle. Don't completely slice it in half. And then you take that like little flap of chicken. Sorry for the word usage there. And then you fill said chicken pocket with sun-dried tomatoes, mozzarella cheese, Parmesan. God, don't forget the Parmesan. You can even throw in some peppers, some whatever you want to honestly stuff this bird breast with. Put it back together. You flour the breast with, I use a seasoned flour, which is typically, it consists of thyme, garlic, salt, pepper. It'd be pretty fairly generous with it because flour tends to bland food very easily. You get the breast nice and dusted with it. I would suggest 6 breasts if you're doing it for a full family. I'm going to link a recipe in the episode that will, you know, it'll give some more details. But you pan fry them to get them nice and seared on the outside, and then you put them in the oven to finish them. You preheat the oven to 400. The rest, I mean, the cook time's like 40 minutes, but the specifics will be in the recipe description. The recipe link on the episode. And then I always suggest garlic mashed potatoes and some kind of vegetable. My personal favorite is oven roasted broccoli. I cannot emphasize more how delicious oven roasting vegetables are. A lot of people like steam them. They put them in, they saute them. You can cut up your vegetables, coat them in olive oil, and give them a nice dusting of your seasoning of choice. Put them in a preheated oven. And obviously the vegetable depends on the cooking time. But you can do anything else in that period of time. You can forget about your vegetables until that timer goes off. And it... oven roasted vegetables give that like nice little bit of caramelization, crisping. If you want to cook them a little longer, that kind of like blackened taste, some people like that.
Do you have a preference or on the temperature? I know you said the time depends on the vegetable, but I always struggle with this. Like I normally do like 400 or something like that, but
yeah, that's typically where I roam around 400. It cooks them fairly quickly. Like, so in my recipe or my recommendation for this week, I'm using broccoli. Soak it in olive oil. Douse it in like Italian seasoning, garlic, salt, pepper. Make sure everything is nice and coated. Put it on a tray, evenly spaced out, and put it in the oven and forget about it for like 15 minutes. That's on a 400 degree oven. Obviously, you can adjust this time based on your personal preferences of like cook level of cookedness. If you like that blackness, a little bit of char, it's all up to you.
Cool.
But this okay. This stuffed chicken marsala, you serve it with the garlic mashed potatoes and the vegetable broccoli, and it is a meal for the books. And essentially, so another thing I forgot to mention in this recipe is the pan that you use this to sear the chicken in, the breaded chicken in, flour chicken, I should say. You deglaze it with Marsala wine, and you cook like mushrooms in with it for a time, and add heavy cream, and then like any extra garlic or salt or pepper that. To your taste, kind of where you like it, but it makes a very rich, kind of sweet sauce that will guarantee to impress.
Nice.
Unlike discussions about politics,
wow, that sounds so good. I'm excited to make it. I probably will end up making it within the next week. Here at home. So for all of you out there that are worried about a controversial Thanksgiving this year, Thanksgiving dinner, if you're celebrating with your family, even a small family gathering, which we would encourage, is you can just make a bunch of stuffed chicken marsala and just tell everybody, you know, like, let's just agree to eat and we can talk about other things after we've enjoyed a meal together and try to stay away from politics. I feel like this year, even if you try to have rational conversations, it's probably not a great idea to do that when you have some limited time with your family. So I would just say, maybe just focus on having a good time together this year. And anyway, thanks for sharing that, Jim. That was, I'm very hungry now. So
I'm excited. Well, I'm glad. We both know about the stuffed chicken marsala from Olive Garden.
Yeah.
It was like 9 million calories, but Jesus, it was good.
Yeah. I think the funny thing about... it's kind of part of the recommendation, but it would be part of all recommendations moving forward. It's a three-step exercise that you can use when you're trying food, especially food that you've never had before. So the first thing that you do is you cut a bite and you smell the food. So it's like experiential eating, essentially. You smell the food, you know, try to pick up on all the different things. Do it a couple of times. And often if your food's too hot to eat, you can do this. And then you put the food in your mouth and don't chew it or do anything. You just like feel the textures, just like roll the food. This is kind of weird, like graphic, but like feel the textures, like roll the food around in your mouth and like feel what the textures of the food that you're eating are. And then when you chew it, make sure that you chew it slowly and really experience all the spices and all the flavors that hit your palate all at once. And I guarantee you, if you eat this way, you will eat less and you'll enjoy your food more. I've been doing this for a couple of weeks since I've started doing it, and it's like kind of reinvigorated my love for like trying new things and eating new meals. New cuisine. That's not to say you have to do it every single time, but I think we've kind of pulled some of the enjoyment out of eating because we see it as like satiation. Like, I just need to eat because I'm hungry, not because I want to enjoy the experience. So anyway, that just reminded, what you said reminded me of that. So.
Agreed. You know, if you wolf down your food, you will never be able to enjoy it as much as savoring it bite by bite.
1,000,000%. Well, thanks, Jim. Is there anything else you want to leave everybody with before we say goodbye for the week?
I think it's time to say goodbye for the week.
All right. Well, if we don't release an episode before Thanksgiving, Jim and I will definitely be releasing one next week at some point. But everybody have a happy and safe Thanksgiving and enjoy your food and enjoy your friends and family if you can do that. And if not, just know that we're right there with you. Listen to one of our episodes or something else that brings you joy and makes you happy.
Agreed.
Take care, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey everybody, thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoy listening to it as much as Jim and I enjoy making it. If you'd like to subscribe, we will be sending out feature content within the coming weeks, months, and years. So feel free to do that, and we'd love to have you around.
And Ryan, don't forget, we're on social media.
Oh, that's right. We are on Twitter at expandmind, be kind, and that is the letter B. And then we are also on Gmail. If you want to send us an email, it's expandyourmindandbekind@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us questions or any thoughts that anyone may have, and can't wait till the next episode.
Like Dr. Dre.